Today is Friday. It is March 25th, 2016, and this is the Mincing Rascals. I'm John Williams, and joining us, as always, Chicago Tribune columnist Eric Zorn. Hello, Mr. Zorn.
Hi, John.
Steve Bertrand is here from WGN Radio. Hello, Steve.
Hello, John Williams.
Krista McQuarrie is on a cruise. Is that what I heard? Isn't that a little la-ti-da for her? I thought she looked down her nose at that sort of thing.
She's a fancy person.
It's a booze cruise on Lake Michigan.
She is cruising for a bruising, right?
And that is Jeff Berkowitz, who is the host of Public Affairs, a political interview show that has been airing for 18 years in Chicago. You can also see it in Rockford and Aurora and 34 metro suburbs. He's also a blogger at Chicago Now. And Eric Zorn said you'd be good. Hi, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Eric, for the recommendation.
No pressure.
but I appreciate it anyway.
This week on the campaign front, the candidates reacted to the news of the Brussels attacks and then segued, at least in the case of Donald Trump and Ted Cruz, into attacks and defenses of their wives. More specifically, early this week, Ted Cruz said that we should empower police to patrol neighborhoods to suppress radical Islam. Donald Trump said we should waterboard those who helped in the attack, or at least that would be his tactic. But, you know, we have a short attention span in this country. I think most of the attention this week about at least the presidential campaign was via Twitter, and it was on whose wives are hotter. Steve Bertrand, I just shake my head anymore. What was your overriding reaction this week?
It was a wife fight, not a knife fight.
That's good.
Well, and you know, Donald Trump is being laid sort of on Trump, but it was a super PAC for Ted Cruz that started it with the picture of Melania, and then Trump fought back. But it's, you know, it's remarkable. I was thinking of this. I remember, Eric, I'm sure you remember the line from Bob Dole in 1980, "Stop lying about my record." Remember that? It was to George Bush, and that was a dramatic thing. Bob Dole said, "Stop lying about my record." And the stuff that's going on now, you know, makes any past political fight or sharp word just pale in comparison. They're fighting over wives now, whose wife is hotter, and Donald Trump, or rather Ted Cruz, had, you know, he can't help but look rehearsed, but it looked like this rehearsed sort of indignation to Donald Trump's tweeting about it. I don't know.
Well, if I were Ted Cruz, I would be genuinely indignant about that attack. I mean, it was really, and it's one of those things where, you know, when Trump said this, when Trump starts attacking Heidi Cruz, you think, well, now he's gone too far. And how many times have I said that right in the last 6 months or last 8 months? Now Ted Cruz.
Every Friday.
Now Donald Trump has gone too far. Yeah. This is it. This is the end of his campaign. So I just kind of have to shrug this off and go, well,
then
it's like
he did with the Ricketts, Eric, where he says, you know, better be careful, better watch out. He's got the beans that he's going to spill on Heidi Cruz, and we don't know what those are.
Well, maybe we do.
But it turns out the latest is not, at least confirmed, but the latest I saw in the half hour, just go across AOL News, was it's not Heidi, but it's Ted.
Yeah.
That unconfirmed rumor of cheating on his wife.
I actually read a lot about that today, but that would
notice
be the
I just
beans
throw
on
things out there, unsourced, no sources. It used to be in the olden days.
I told you he'd be good.
Sources. Now you have no sources. And Eric Zorn taught me everything I know about journalism.
There you go.
Right, Eric?
Yeah, but affairs now, that's old news. No one cares about that. You know, we've got all the other things going on. Banning Muslims, building walls, an affair, that pales by everything else.
I suppose at least in terms of importance.
Yes, especially since Donald Trump is on, what, his third wife.
Right.
On the other hand, Ted Cruz's whole appeal is to the, you know, evangelical Christians. I mean, he is.
That's not true. Why do you people who are liberals keep saying that? He's a constitutionalist. He's not just evangelical, not just family values. Am I the only person in the media who's fair and balanced?
He is, though, no, those other two things. Yeah.
But he's
a constitutionalist, but he's until he it also comes, has.
Well, he's a constitutionalist until it comes to the Supreme Court nominee.
Well, he's a constitutionalist there, too. Just because the Republicans are doing what the Democrats do, it doesn't make it not a constitutionalist. You can't have unilateral disarmament. They would be doing this if everything were switched around. The fact that it hasn't happened before, I mean, is like last week when you're talking about the Biden rule. Biden said he would do this in 1992. So if it happens in 2015, why is it suddenly different? Am I the only person who sees the world this way?
No, in fact, I pointed out in the column pretty quickly after the death of Scalia, which is that if the shoes were on the other feet, you can be sure that the Democrats would be arguing for delay and the Republicans would be arguing for speed.
Why don't we get on with it? Just so we don't have this thing going ahead. Whoever gets to be president will appoint liberal or conservative. And let's talk about something meaningful.
No, it'll be liberal or liberal because it'll be Trump or Clinton.
You think that Trump would appoint a liberal Supreme Court justice?
I think Ted Cruz has a shot at this. If you look at him, he's actually looking presidential these days. They're following around. If Kasich were only, would just get out of the race and, you know, make this a one-on-one.
Jeff, the point I make about the constitutionalists is, you know, maybe the Democrats would do it or not. Biden spoke as in a hypothetical. The Republicans clearly are doing it now. But my point is that here's a guy who says he's a constitutionalist, and they're sort of denying that it's the constitutional duty and timeline to do it now. That's the issue I have with all of this.
There's nothing in the Constitution that says in that timeline. Read the Constitution. It's only 27 pages. Show me where in the Constitution it says you must do this within a certain time period.
Well, but there is an implicit sense that this has to be done at some point.
Well,
there is no clock, but
if you want to amend the Constitution, go ahead and do it. Just don't say it's implicit.
I didn't say it was in the Constitution, but it doesn't say in the Constitution either that the outed party can wait until the next election or wait till the next favorable election.
It's not in the Constitution. It's not there. So if there's no barrier to doing it, look, the folks who started this mess, they believed in politics. And what is not in the Constitution is left to politics, left to the people, left to the states. Would you folks stop putting things in the Constitution that aren't there?
No, I don't think anyone's saying that it's in the Constitution. I think that it is implicit in the Constitution that what the advise and consent role is not that person has to meet our entire political approval. But why is that provision in there, the Constitution? That's why I have to look at what the intent in the Constitution was.
The advise and consent can occur. It can occur after the election as well as before. We've had this kind of a tie thing before, and nothing terrible happens. We have two vacancies of the Board of Governors, okay, and they're not getting confirmed now for the same reason. That's probably more important than the Supreme Court. The Board of Governors and the Federal Reserve System, they determine monetary policy. Way more important. Determines people's jobs, their way of living, and so forth. I don't hear anybody talking about that. They didn't even mention there are two vacancies in the Board of Governors. Hell, they don't even know what the hell the Board of Governors is on the Federal Reserve System. Why don't we talk about that?
I would rather talk about what's happening this week.
On the scene. Pardon?
Well, give us a chance to breathe here. I think the more compelling thing right now is what's happening with Ted Cruz, Donald Trump, and for that matter, John Kasich. And I don't know that I don't know. I'm not suggesting either way, but I'm wondering, I guess, what the impact will be of this National Enquirer story, which is going to roll forward this week. And it is that Ted Cruz has had five different affairs with women who he has, kept these
five.
Stories.
Wait a second. Did you say five? Cinco?
Five.
Five. He's
five
a dead
mistresses.
Man. Okay. I thought it might be one sometime in the past.
Five.
Cinco is
no.
Like
and the pictures
man.
Are not only are they pictures. They have the pictures pixelated in the National Enquirer. Other sources are.
How could this not have come out before? If it were true, don't you think it would have come out before?
I don't know, but this is the same magazine / newspaper that also outed Tiger Woods, John Edwards, and Jesse Jackson. So, hey, none of us are here to defend the National Enquirer. I'm just saying they have a track record of getting this sort of thing right.
It's also the same publication that recently did a big cover story on Justice Scalia was murdered. So let's make sure that we keep this in some sort of perspective.
But it doesn't matter if it's true, Eric, because you know what's going to happen this week? People are going to talk about this. And now, not that he is playing defense already, but Cruz is going to have to play defense on this issue for who knows how many days. And it's sort of like Donald Trump's calling him lying Ted Cruz. Trump is a master at that. Cruz, by the way, is, along with Donald Trump, the most dishonest of the five remaining candidates. But the fact that he keeps calling him that, it starts to stick. And this association, whether true or not, is now going to follow Cruz, whether he likes it or not.
I wonder if it will matter.
What I would do, if it definitely is not true, if it's totally fabricated, I would announce a major lawsuit within one day, and I would try to implicate Donald Trump in it, and I say, let's go on and have a debate and discuss the issues. or Donald, you come up and have an early defense to the lawsuit naming you, okay, because I know you're part of it. And if he did that, that would shut it up and it would be over. And we find, but if he doesn't have the goods, if it's possibly true, he's a dead man. But if not,
he is a friend. They are friends, Trump and the publisher of the National Enquirer.
Are they really? I didn't know that.
Well, yeah. Trump's got friends everywhere.
Trump.
Look. I want to pause it for
you guys in the media.
Hold on, go ahead, Steve.
Trump goes ahead and starts fires all over. Jeff.
Do you? Yeah. What is it again? You do? You have a political talk show?
Political interview show.
Okay. Well, then don't say you guys in the media again, because you're one of the guys in the media too.
Oh no! You're in the mainstream media. I'm like a little guy.
Okay. Anyway, I would like to posit that really every vote cast in the Republican primaries is about Donald Trump. None of them is really about Ted Cruz. So I do think that this might not have that great of an impact on this, because you're either going to vote for Donald Trump or you're going to vote against Donald Trump.
Right, because
Ted
as
Cruz
a result
happens
of this,
to be carrying those votes.
What are you going to do, vote for Hillary? No, you're either going to vote for Trump or not, and after that, almost nothing matters. Your point, right, Steve?
Yeah, exactly. No. I think every vote is about Trump.
No hope for Kasich? Eric Zorin, you don't think Kasich is going to – there's no path, as they say, for him to presidency?
Not in the primaries. I think he's mathematically eliminated from the 1237. Is that the right number, 1237?
1237.
Okay. He's mathematically eliminated from that possibility. I think what he's hoping for, and really realistically what Ted Cruz is hoping for, is that this goes to an open convention and Donald Trump does not win on the first ballot, and then there's a big soul-searching moment in the Republican Party, and they said, we cannot nominate this man, Donald Trump, to be our standard bearer, and so they will look to somebody else.
Like Scott Walker.
Well, the question is, do they just give it to the silver medalist, who will almost certainly be Ted Cruz, or do they say, well, even Ted Cruz is damaged goods, he's too far right, and we need to find somebody more like Paul Ryan, who's been my prediction all along.
Yeah,
or,
no kidding.
Or
John Kasich.
Or John Kasich. Kasich beats. I just saw a story. Kasich beats Hillary Clinton. He's the only one of the Republicans who beats Hillary Clinton.
How do you turn to
a poll.
If the guy
it has
can,
been.
And I like Kasich. But how do you turn to a guy who's been thumped over and over and over, and then say he's going to be your nominee? I don't know how they can do that.
Yeah, but I mean, who's he been thumped by? No, he hasn't been. He's been thumped by that percentage of people who respond to Republican surveys. And I guess have shown up in the polls. But you're trying to win a general election.
I know.
And I think that if he was only being thumped by left-handers, Steve, do you think he would still have a shot in a general election?
No, I think he has a shot, John. Yes. No. My point isn't that he has. I think he has the best shot. But I'm saying if you're running a party and the guy. I don't know how you can turn to the guy who comes in third after he's only won one or maybe two or three states. I don't know how, as a party, you can pick that guy. I think you would have to go outside.
What do you mean, ethically, legally? What do you mean? The point is, win a general election. Which of those three candidates, Steve Bertrand, do you think has the best chance of beating the Democrats?
I think he does. But
Then there's your answer.
Well, I want to know what Jeff thinks. If you're a delegate to the Republican convention, who are you angling for?
I think I think I'm probably going with Ted Cruz. It's the rules are very murky as to how well the candidates are bound, even on the first ballot. These things are a matter of state law, state conventions, and party. And so it's very difficult. And I've talked to some people about this. All I know is murky. So one, it's murky as to whether these delegates are entirely bound on the first ballot, whether they can differ, and how things change on the second ballot. But if they're pretty well uncontrolled, these delegates in the second round or second ballot, if you're a activist, as you most likely are if you become a delegate, you know, the activists in the Democratic Party are fairly far left, and the activists in the Republican Party are fairly far right. They're not going to be very enthusiastic about John Kasich. And it's not entirely clear that he does best in general. I think there's a recent Fox poll that has Cruz beating Hillary as well as Kasich, and Trump is the only guy losing, I believe, in that Fox poll. So you need somebody who can reach out and reach the independents and some Democrats in the general election, but it's also important that you energize the base. I don't think the base is going to be very energized about John Kasich. They would be quite energized.
But isn't the secret about John Kasich that most people don't know is that he actually is pretty conservative. He's a very conservative guy.
It's just that he's not really known as a hardcore in terms of one strict constructionist. You know, Cruz is what you call him, a constitutionalist. He's also pretty hardcore in terms of trying to restrict spending. Cruz is. He's also pretty hardcore in terms of being an outsider, standing up to the party. That's why they hate him so much. Kasich is really an insider. He tries to say he's outside, but he's somebody. He's not terrible.
I don't think he does try to say he's outside, Jeff. He's the guy who stands on the stage and says, "I'm the one in Congress when we had a balanced budget. I'm the one who was there when Ronald Reagan was there." I don't think he portrays himself as an outsider at all.
I've heard him do it sometimes. So I think because everybody says these days, or at least in this election, you have to be on the outside. Look, the vote is going for Trump. It's going for Cruz. They say it's because people are upset with government. Democrats are upset with government. That's why they're going with Bernie.
But Jeff, if you put on your strategist hat, and say you're advising the Republican Party, say, and it's very important for both parties to win the White House this fall because of the Supreme Court, because of a lot of things. This is very important. Hang on to the White House. Which candidate do you think really has the best chance at winning the White House for the Republicans?
Overall, Ted Cruz is a much more exciting candidate. When I watched John Kasich, I was really surprising he's doing as well as he has.
And do you think a Republican is going to win, Jeff? You think Cruz can beat?
I think the Democratic argument is essentially it was a mess. Obama came in and things got better. The problem with that argument is they didn't get that much better. The economy is not that much better. It's terrible relative to where it should be. They have to go back and say, oh, but it was terrible in 2008. But he's had 8 years to make it better. Terrorism is a real problem. This is silly. Hillary Clinton walks around and says, isn't it terrible that Trump and Cruz want to do something really dramatic about terrorism? And when you look at the polls, not just the Republicans, Democrats, people are scared. They're scared about what happened in San Bernardino, terrorism right in the United States, and they're scared of what's happening in Europe. And Obama says, I'm here on a trip on – he spent more time doing the wave than he spent 51 seconds responding to the Brussels attack.
One of the criticisms of what's happening.
He spoke at length about it, but never mind. I don't know where you get 51 seconds, but go ahead, Steve.
That's what he did when he came out and he spoke about it. He said it's not an existential threat.
You're telling us, hold on, you want us to believe that Donald Trump or the President Obama has spoken for an entirety of 51 seconds about what happened in Brussels?
On the first few hours when it came out, yes, 51 seconds, and he went back to doing the wave.
One of the criticisms of what's going on in Europe is that the Muslim communities, the peoples there, have been isolated. They've not been taken into the general society of France, Belgium, right. Pick a country. Do you think that Ted Cruz's idea of increasing patrols and surveillance in Muslim neighborhoods in the United States is going to lessen that feeling here or increase it here?
If he said, I didn't see his exact words, but if he said this, here's what he could say. Look, especially in Europe, and you're right, especially in Europe, it's not just that they're not assimilated, so they're being left alone. It's not that they need patrols there. I mean, obviously what happened is you have an enclave of terrorists right there in Brussels and in portions of Europe, an enclave. We all know that, and they're staying away because they're afraid.
I'm talking about Dearborn, Michigan.
This conversation is about what's happening in the United States. He said that we should empower police.
No. Well, here's what – if he did, he should walk that back slightly and say
– Well, he hasn't at all. Let's just talk about what he said about what should happen in the United States. We should empower police so that they can patrol neighborhoods to suppress Islamism. And when pressed about that on
radical,
the CBS
– Did he say radical Islam?
He actually uses the phrase Islamism, whatever the hell that means. But let's continue. So then when pressed about that, they were asking him about this on the CBS Morning News this week, and they said, where are these pockets of radical Islamism that you want to ferret out or suppress in the United States. We don't have cities like that, like they do in Europe. Where are they? And he said, yes, we do. And then he paused and said, Minnesota. And then he said, Michigan. I happen to live in Minneapolis. I'm ground zero for what he's talking about. There is no appetite in Minneapolis among the natives or among the recent immigrants for patrolling neighborhoods. And what does that mean? I mean, I don't even know what that is. So is this guys walking around in guns or teams of police officers? Or is it? You can. Let me finish my thought. Think about what he's asking us to do. Never mind the constitutionality of it. Think for a minute about the efficacy of it. Okay, what do you want to say?
Look, I think this is really a modification of the broken windows theory of criminal justice. I think you have in Minneapolis, perhaps other parts of Minnesota, an aggregation of people who are thought to have sneaked into this country and who are radical Islam terrorists, or certainly inclined that way. What their numbers are, I don't know. Where they are exactly, but Cruz would not be the first person to say of this. And it is people who are reasonably intelligent and have a sense of if we have pockets of problems in the country, that would be one area. Michigan is another area. And what you try to do, if you think this is serious and you're a serious person, we all say, and even Hillary talks about, we need better intelligence both outside the United States and inside the United States. And part of that intelligence is sending people into these areas. Not to go after every Muslim, of course not, but to try to find where these problems are, to try to get people to talk to you, to try to gather intelligence so you can attack this problem.
You don't think we're doing that? He doesn't think we're doing that already?
We're not doing it because Barack.
We're not. We're not. We are.
And saying the word radical.
That's why. Wait. Okay.
Oh,
wait.
You know,
wait, Jeff.
That is such a lie. So, by the way, we are doing that.
So because he won't use that term, we're not looking after terrorists. Because he won't use that term and offend Muslims around the world, we are not looking after terrorists in the United States. That's what you're saying.
Not as much as we should, because we have this thing about, you know, discrimination based on religion or race and so forth. So we're so politically correct.
But what good does it do?
What has to seep into how you conduct law enforcement operations.
But what difference does it make? What difference does it make if you describe terrorism? Why do you have to finger Islam? I mean, and the question is, does it do any good or does it?
Because our problem with terrorism, despite what people say, the terrorism that you and I and we're talking about now is not what happened in Oklahoma a number of years ago when, you know, Timothy McVeigh blew up buildings. Our problem with terrorism now is basically, in large part, the danger from radical Islamic terrorists. It doesn't come from Jewish terrorists. It could be some at times. Italian and so forth. And so if you refuse to recognize that, it hampers your approach to law enforcement.
Well, I think
that's crazy.
But don't you think, I mean, I think we recognize it. It's just that we don't.
Most people agree with what I just said. This is why Trump is popular.
We all agree with what you said.
To the right. It's very popular. Trump is not popular because of his wife. Trump is popular because in part he is saying what most people believe in.
I think it's ridiculous. I think it is ridiculous for you to say that because the president doesn't use the word Islamic terrorist, that we are not fighting and looking for terrorists. I think that's ridiculous.
I didn't say that's the only thing.
I think you did.
You're right. If that is the only thing that President Obama did that's wrong or that I disagreed with, you would be right. But that is only one of a variety of things that relate to this discussion. Another thing he does is wrong is he's known as No Drama Obama. He doesn't show any passion. He doesn't show that there's anything unusual. And we have what happened in San Bernardino when you have ISIS, you have ISIS-inspired terrorism. It reflects back to just was a year or two ago he referred to ISIS as the JD squad. I mean, these are a group of things. You can go back to Benghazi in 2012, the election. I like Barack. He was on my show six times. I'm not an Obama hater. Eric knows that. I like Barack. He's a good guy and smart guy, and I'm not. But one of his problems is plays politics like everybody else. And in 2012, when it came time for reelection, he was trying to argue that Al-Qaeda was under control, okay? And part of that argument was to minimize any attention to our embassy. And part of that resulted in four of our people being killed. And when Hillary says, when people ask, why did this happen? What? And she says, what does it matter? She'll be hearing about that in the 22nd election. So in short, what I'm saying is, terrorism is a major concern of people in this country, and Hillary and the Democrats are making a major mistake. This gets back to your question, do I think the Republicans can win? They're making a major mistake when they're going to talk about terrorism as if it's not a major concern of the people in this country. And
all right, all right.
But whether it's Cruz running, that is that's one way in which they win by saying...
Well, I think it's a matter of how you decide to talk about it then.
Right,
I agree with you that I wouldn't say what... Like, I hate to be in the position of defending those words of Ted Cruz. Why these folks can't get it right, I don't know. I would use the kind of words I'm talking about, which is not to go after every Muslim, which is not to ban Muslims, but just to say we need to gather intelligence better. We need to work with the
Muslims.
Yeah,
well, that's not what they're saying. Eric, what was your point?
Well, no, I mean, what I was going to say is I think that as a matter of political analysis, Jeff is right in that especially if we have some more incidents like we just had in Brussels, terrorism is going to be really top of mind this fall, and that voters may come to see the Republican candidate, whoever it might be, as being a stronger presence in an issue that maybe is number one on people's minds. And that could, I'm just looking at it as a political matter. I don't care who's right or wrong about the analysis of it. As a political matter, it's probably it may play to the Republicans' advantage.
Yeah, but I think that kind of rhetoric matters too, Eric. I mean, I think that if you're going to try and corral support around the world in other Muslim nations, if you're going to try and corral the support of the 30 million, or is it 3 million, the 3 million Muslim Americans who live here, I think how you talk about it matters. Bombing them into oblivion or suggesting the door-to-door raids are a good idea, I think is not smart. That's just bad policy. It's bad politics. Let's move on from this to one other subject I want to quickly get to, and that is the fact that in the Chicago Tribune today, Friday the 25th, they're reporting on how Illinois and the Chicago area particularly are seeing more people leave, I don't know if I want to use the word flee, than anywhere else in the country. Eric, is that just a little demographic quirk, or should we actually be thinking about that?
Well, I think if you look at around the country, yeah, it is something to be worried about. Cook County is emptying out. I think we're the only one of the 10 largest counties in emptying out is an overstatement, of course. Is the only
we have 9.5 million people in the metro.
Cook County is the only county that's losing population of the major top 10 counties in the country, as I remember reading these statistics. And yeah, it's a concern. I mean, people are. There is, an automatic and frequent churn of population, but the trends here are not great.
I think you can even expand it a little bit because it wasn't just the county. What I read, it was the region,
the
metro region. So it's not like they're fleeing the Cook County government or Chicago.
DuPage.
Right. They're leaving the area.
Truly.
Yeah.
And the question is why?
Well, it's Illinois, and the trend of people leaving Illinois goes back a decade. And the reason is very simple. It's the economics. The reason is, and really we've had now since 2002, hate to be too partisan about this because I'm, as Eric knows, pretty balanced. But seriously, since 2002 until a year ago, we had a Democratic governor, we had a Democratic-controlled state house, and, of course, a Democratic-controlled state senate, and really a Democratic-controlled state Supreme Court. You've had liberal, worse than liberal, you've had liberal corrupt Democratic rule in the state, and it's not been good for the economy. It's been a nuclear winter. That's what people predicted. And unless you turn this around, unless you do some of the reforms that Bruce Rauner's talked about, he's been very ineffective in bringing them about. But at least he's going in the right direction. You're going to continue to have people fleeing Chicago, fleeing Cook County, and fleeing the rest of the state. I mean, I could tick off these basic reforms that people want. They want workers' comp reform so that employers can compete in Illinois much better with our surrounding states. That's an obvious one. And the fact that that hasn't happened here is just amazing. I mean, you folks should, and Eric should be writing about this, because I know this art is in the right place. You know, and we should have redistricting reform, of course.
I think it's all of these things.
Corporations that want to come here, you know, want this kind of stability.
I think there's also some vague things you can't always put your finger on to exactly. Like, I wonder how much political corruption weighs on people. I wonder how much just the patina of crime in the city, even though it might not come to our comfortable neighborhoods in the suburbs, I wonder if people just hear that and it weighs on them psychologically, and at some point they go, you know what, I'm going to go to Denver. You know, well, there's specific things.
I agree with that. Is that crime is important. Laquan McDonald, having that shooting and that clip go around, having had a state's attorney who sat on that for a year, that can't be good. If you were going to come here, you'd want clean enough government to have, you have a shooting, and you're telling me the state's attorney had that within a few weeks and it took her a year to figure that out?
Yeah, and I mean, she...
That's a sign right there of corrupt government.
And she certainly paid the political price for that. But you know, did anyone see Will Lee, a front-page column, John Cass's former legman, did a front-page column of the Tribune earlier this week about African-Americans leaving Chicago in significant numbers, moving back, sort of this reverse migration back to the South because they're just tired of the neighborhoods that we have here and the lack of safety.
Tired of the neighborhoods and tired of the schools that don't teach kids how to read and write. You know,
that's CPS, another one, too.
No, but CPS is the 85% of the kids in the Chicago public schools are either African American or Hispanic. So if only 25% of the kids read at grade level, we have a major problem. We should have charter schools and freedom of choice galore. Instead, we have Forrest Claypool talking about a limit on the number of I'm so disappointed in Forrest Claypool, who I thought used to be a reformer. He comes in and heads up CPS. And he's doing exactly what the unions want, no competition. Keep these kids in failing schools. Don't let them have a choice to have some benefit in their lives. Of course they'd get the hell out of here. If I heard Forrest Claypool should be so ashamed, okay? He should be right here. He used to come on my TV show, but now he doesn't even talk to me. He doesn't talk to anybody because he doesn't want to challenge him. I mean, you guys should have him on next time and challenge him. Way better than
We're wrapping it up now, Steve. You got enough time to do the recommendations with us?
Sure, real quick, yeah.
Okay, you go first.
Okay,
it's time for the what are you seeing, what are you reading, what are you watching? Bertrand, go.
I'm going to take a yoga class this week. I think that's what I need to.
You know, I have to insert this. So there's so much anxiety in our lives about this election. And the number 1237 is the number of delegates that a Republican needs to get the nomination. And so I was lying in bed doing a Sudoku, trying to forget about all of this, just forget about this. And I look at my clock.
It's 12:37.
It was 12:37 in the morning. What's your recommendation, my friend? Yoga?
I want to say there's a book by a guy named Chris Pavone, and it's called The Travelers. He writes it's espionage, but it's mostly character driven. And I interviewed him. He's on Steve Bertrand on Books this week at WGN Plus. But he points out in the interview, I didn't realize it. There's such a light touch. There's not a gun in the entire book. It's written about characters. It's a book about people who happen to be spies. The Travelers by Chris Pavone.
How about you, Eric Zorn? What's your recommendation?
I'm recommending an article in Chicago Magazine called Four Reasons an Express Train to O'Hare is Still a Terrible Idea by Daniel K. Hertz. And he talks about how this is an expensive, it's going to be really expensive. It's not going to save much time. And there's one in Toronto that they tried this idea in Toronto and hardly anybody rides it. So yeah, I really recommend, look at Chicago Magazine. It's online. Four Reasons the Express Train to O'Hare is Still a Terrible Idea.
How about you, Jeff Berkowitz? What do you want to recommend?
I want to recommend Morning Joe, a TV program that's on from 5 to 8 in the morning on MSNBC. Morning Joe refers to Joe Scarborough, a former conservative Republican congressman, and he co-hosted, essentially, with Mika Brzezinski, the daughter of the famous National Security Affairs advisor under the Carter administration. And so even with Joe, they do lean quite left, but it's really the most thoughtful morning show in terms of digesting the news of yesterday, national news of the day before, way better than Fox and Friends, who I might be closer to, you know, in terms of political bias. But Fox and Friends is just awful.
Look at that, Steve.
I don't even know what CNN has. So really, you know, no matter what your bias is, this is the most thoughtful review. And the second thing, I'll give you a bonus.
Can I just interject before Jeff goes to a second thing? Bertrand recommended that about a month ago.
That's his morning show. His thing.
I'm sorry, Jeff, go ahead.
Well, we have that in common. So, and the second thing is Special Report, Show and Balance, which is a national show that doesn't get enough attention you know, it comes on Fox News Channel here in the Chicago area every weekday at 5 o'clock. And it's really the only solid hour of real national news that's probing. The first 40 minutes is that, and it's entertaining, so it's a little less boring than the news hour on PBS. Slightly writer center, but not terribly writer center. And the last 20 minutes, they actually have balance. They have maybe two conservatives and one liberal discussing. I would prefer to see two and two. But so, that's still more balance and commentary discussion than you would get on MSNBC or even CNN. So if you watch Morning Joe in the morning and you close the day at 5 o'clock with Special Report on the Fox News Channel, you would be so informed of what's going on nationally. I mean, so I heartily recommend it to people who aren't watching those now.
I've been reading The Martian, saw the movie, loved it. What fun that was. I didn't know that I'd want to read the book afterwards, but I saw it, and I liked the story about how the book was written, dropped in installments, and actually with the sort of participation of people who are reading it along the way. So I picked it up and am really enjoying it. So far seems to be relatively true to the movie, too, or vice versa, but enjoying the book, even though I know how it's going to end, The Martian. I'm John Williams, and you can hear me Saturdays on WGN Radio from 1 to 3. Read Eric Zorn in the Chicago Tribune. You can find him at chicagotribune.com/Zorn. Steve Bertrand at WGN Radio does a business noon hour, and you can also find him at Steve Bertrand Travel and Steve Bertrand on Books. And Jeff Berkowitz is the host of Public Affairs, a political interview show. You can find that throughout the metro area, 30 different stations, 34 different stations. You can see it in Aurora and Rockford and in Chicago as well. He's a blogger in Chicago now. The Mincing Rascals are produced by our friend Kristen Decker, not to be confused with Kristen McQuarrie, who couldn't be in on this pod this week, and also engineered today by Bob Ferguson.
You little rascal, you! You little rascal, you! You little rascal, you!
The Mincing Rascals podcast is distributed by the WGN Plus Podcast Network. You can listen on the WGN Plus app or online at WGNplus.com, or you can subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes.